We're privileged today to have with us one of our missionaries, Bill Edmondson. And as we were considering this year, recognizing we need encouragement again in the area of evangelism. And we are blessed to have one of our missionaries local who is really, God has gifted him in this area. He's many, many years of experience, and some of it's learning the hard way, right? You know, how not to do evangelism and just the lessons that God has taught him. We were already challenged in Sunday school to recognize the need for of a relationship. We're made in the image of God, who is a relational God, and we need to invest in the relationships of those around us. So thank you. Come minister to us, and thank you for being here.
Can you hear me now? All right. I'm not even going to try to look down there this time. No, but seriously, as I was saying, and you can turn to Matthew 28, 18 through 20. We'll be looking at a familiar passage, but so applied probably a little bit different, I'm going to guess. But what was I saying? Pastor said, thank you for being here. Deb would tell you that I need to be here. You know, for me to sit in church on Sunday after years of equipping is to cause trouble. Yeah, Deb, when I sit at, you know, almost every Sunday I'm out speaking and ministering. And I attend a Harvest Baptist Church in Waynesburg, a fine church. I don't know that you find a father-son pastoral combination better than what you have in Waynesburg, Iowa. But I can still cause trouble. And Deb has now limited me to one question a night on Wednesday night. Well, I get one question. And she would prefer it to be a question, not a statement. So, you know, the truth is that God has equipped us to minister in a certain way, and we don't feel at ease if we're not able to do that. It just doesn't work that way. So I appreciate this. This is the very thing I want to talk about. I am you know, there's many things I cannot do, and I'm not going to tell you all those things. We don't have enough time. And I don't like bragging about what I can't do. But there's a lot of them. I'll just say, even for a church this size, to be the daily administrator of it, and dealing with sinners just like I am, would be very difficult for me. The patience that people, pastors have with me, I would have a hard time giving out. This is my weakness. I couldn't do that. It would drive me crazy. Drive you crazy. But what I can do, what God has gifted us with, is the area of reaching people with the gospel. And as Romans 12 says, that once you define what God helps you see where He has equipped you for ministry, then by all means, go for it. And having been many, many years ago, and now a wrestler, I know what it means to be aggressive. Deb, in fact, says, Bill, quit bragging about how you were second in state and third in the nation. And I remind her, go, Deb, we live in Williamsburg, Iowa. We're 30 miles from the University of Iowa, and I don't count. I mean, national champions, world champions are a dime a dozen up there. And when I just share my history, it just means I get to be part of the crowd. That's all. So, now why did I say that? Oh, I wanted to brag about that, right? Well, it's 1973, so I mean, come on. I don't know how I got here. But anyway, the ministry of evangelism is the area that God has gifted, and it's an area that is so needed within even our constituency. Now, my limited opinion on this is that we put a lot of time in discipleship. Would you agree with that, Pastor? A lot of teaching on discipleship, and we all affirm 100% the need to see people saved. There's not a person within our constituency, I think, well, probably somebody out there, always is, that would somehow say that doesn't need to happen. And yet, I feel like we've lost our focus. Or we don't quite have the right emphasis. And I suppose that has to do with my calling. That probably is a very subjective opinion because of what we do. But I think there's more to it than that. As I said this morning, the minister of evangelism is really central to everything, and it is not shallow. It has incredible depth to it. And like any art or anything that we dedicate ourselves to, it takes a lot of work. God has gifted me. I do believe that God gifts people to be evangelists. Philip the evangelist is one of the things I like to talk about. Because if there's an illustration in the Bible of an evangelist, it's Philip is the one. A lot to be said about that. But even my particular nature, the way God has made me, lends itself towards this. I think God has equipped me for it. But even then, it has taken a lifetime of study and application and I have so much further to go to be effective at it. So, if we think somehow that we can just say, affirm the importance of the gospel and be effective at gospel ministry, you can forget it. I mean, think of how much time your pastor has put into preparing to pastor this church. It's a lot of time, a lot of work. And I'm sure he continues to improve, continue to sharpen his tools to be a better pastor. No less is that true about our ability to reach people with the gospel. And the second thing is this, by way of introduction. We aren't living in the 50s. Yeah, that's for sure. So many ways. But one of my favorite illustrations is the church in Lynchburg when Jerry Falwell was the pastor. He used to, in a sunny night, he would be on the radio and everybody would be sitting out on their porch. Hello, Abraham. How you doing? Congratulations, you guys. All right. Sorry about that. He was sitting on his porch. The people would be sitting on their porch. And he would be preaching. He'd say, hey, you go, folks, you're out there on your porch. Come on down. And they'd get up off, they'd walk down off the steps and they'd walk up to church. Not so much anymore. Now you say that, yeah, isn't that sad? I don't know. I think that we have the opportunity to have a deeper Christianity, not just a cultural Christianity, because the culture we live in is against us, which may drive us deeper. And I believe, I was in a meeting online and somebody was lamenting. It was with regular Baptist pastors. This has been several years ago. And the then national rep was heading the meeting and we're talking about evangelistic ministry and somebody was lamenting the fact on and on about how what a dark age is and how difficult it is. And my reply was, well, thanks be to God that now maybe we can make some progress. I mean, the alternatives are so stark. It's easy to show the importance of Christ in the world in which we live. So it is particularly true in the age in which we live that we will need to work. We will have to refine the art and we'll have to learn the science and refine the art of helping people become Christians. It's a science. We know what the Bible says, kind of. But the art part of it can only be learned by doing it. So what happens? Will this squawk if I walk down here? In wrestling, I'm so glad to be in Iowa because I can say the word wrestling and you know what I'm talking about. In Boston, not so much. Okay? But in wrestling, I remember as a sophomore in high school, I had told the coach, and the coach was he was like a Dan Gable, and he knew how to use your psychology to to get you motivated. And I told them in ninth grade football, I said, next year, I said, when I'm a sophomore, I'm going to start for the Irmdale Blue Jay wrestling team. He goes, huh, I wouldn't have a sophomore be a starter on my team. Yeah, I think so. And I remember walking in the room, and there was the guy, the varsity guy, and I said, okay, this is the guy I have to beat to be on the varsity. We locked up. Well, in 10 seconds, I was down on my back. Ah! Next time, it took 15 seconds. And then 20. And by the end of the year, I was beating the guy. I was the varsity guy. Now, that didn't happen by osmosis, by good desires, by wanting to be the guy. It took a lot of work. It took the work of knowing the sport of wrestling and knowing how to beat that particular wrestler. Both of those had to come together. That's the way evangelism is. We need to learn the science. We know that people need to be saved, but there's a science to this. There is a theology to it that we need to learn. And then having learned that, we need to start practicing it, and practicing it will make a lot of dumb mistakes that we'll lament like I did this morning. But you can't get there without making the blunderheaded mistakes. You can't do it. We all know that. You laughed when I said, I wish I could start over at 20 instead of, you know, not make the mistakes. I wish I had my knowledge that I have at 68 when I was 20. It would save a lot of anguish for a lot of people, but God didn't foreordain it that'd be that way. You got to go through the steps. A church that I recently was thinking of working with, the pastor, I was talking with him, and he said, Bill, he goes, we'd like you to come. My vocation is to make the gospel known to the nations, and it will never change. That's always going to be true. I'm not going to become the assistant pastor somewhere, which is fine for somebody else, but God's given us a stewardship, which we plan on either fulfilling or dying. Those are the two options. But I was going to work with them, and he said, you could come and be the spearhead for the evangelistic ministry. And you'd be here, and you'd be out there winning people to the Lord. And I said, brother, he goes, that doesn't work that way. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I can't be the headhunter of the church. I'm the guy that wins people. It has to be the church. And unless I can teach the folks what it means to be evangelistic in the day and age in which we live, how to have, as we said, the evangelistic relationship and on down the line, it's not going to work. He goes, oh, he says, no. He goes, a very godly, wonderful man. A sidekick. You know, when you get older, you can recognize error without demolishing the person. You realize they're made up more than one opinion. And that's true in this. He was wrong. He said to me, oh, he goes, they know what to do. They just need to do it. I'm going, I said to myself, and I won't be working there. I didn't say it verbally, but I thought, no, because that is wrong. We really don't quite know how to go about it in the day in which we live. We're still living in a long time ago, and we're not in that world anymore. But the good news is, God is as powerful as He was back then, and He's able to save just like He was back then. And He's able to use us to help people become Christians if we'll submit to His Word and study His Word and do the due diligence to help people become Christians. It's up to us to decide to do that. That's the decision before us. We have to have the will to do it. So in Matthew 28, we read these words, God blessed them and God said that... Wait a second, I'm still in Genesis. That's a good passage too. But it's not going to work for now. Matthew 28 and 18. Here we go. And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Okay, now, just some preliminaries. We know, will just take for granted, and I'm sure I've said this before here, that we know, and I don't want you to answer, we know what the great command of the Great Commission is. Now, the reason I say that is I've even taught this to the candidate class at Baptist Missions, and people would, they would not have the right command. What is the big command of the Great Commission? And they would say something that I think is very important, which we're going to talk about today. They would say the big command is to go. And I would say, yeah, that's a big command, but it's not the main command of this passage. And it's very important that we get it right. Really, the main command, structurally, grammatically, is make disciples or teach all nations, if you're using the KJV. But the word teach literally does mean to make disciples. It's a different word than the normal word would be for teach. It's a different Greek word. And you can translate it teach, but you can also translate it, I like it better, if it's the word make disciples. We're supposed to make disciples. And he tells us three ways in the passage how we make disciples. Right? You see in there, the first one is go. Second one is baptize. Third one is teach them to observe all things. So the command is make disciples, and you do that, you make a disciple, a follower of Christ, by going, that's evangelism, by baptizing, which is much more than a one-time act. It's really entrance in the church. It's going from death, illustrating from death to life, from an old fellowship to a new fellowship. Many things that are incorporated in baptism that needs to be reinforced throughout the life of a Christian. Dead to self, alive to God. Life in the church, many things. A third of the Great Commission is to baptize. And then teach them to observe all that I have commanded you. All of that. I noticed all of the helpful material on the wall about different issues we have in our life and how to handle them. Teaching them to observe all that I have commanded. But it all starts with going. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. And if I notice you're not listening to me, I will ask you personally a question. There was a church I was in a few weeks ago, and there was three people sitting right here, three young people. And one was playing with the other one's hair. And I helped them the whole service. It was just amazing. I asked them a multitude of questions. And when I went back, I said, I won't do it again. But you know what? They listened the whole service too. So if I do that, it's to help. It's not to hinder. Okay. We want to talk about going. Let me ask, and I'm not picking on you because you're not paying attention, because you have been paying attention. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Can I do that? Okay. When you hear the word go, what do you think of? There you go. It's not really rocket science. It's go where you go. Right? Okay. When you think about it in terms of the Great Commission, going, what do you think of? Going. Anyone?
Going to the
next town.
Next town. Going to the next community.
Next community. Africa. Going to Kurdistan. Yeah. I want to take a missions trip to Jerusalem. Seriously. I mean, if there's an important, one of the key nations in the world has to be Israel, right? All right, this is what we understand more than most people, that Israel is important. And we'd like to take a mission trip there just to see how we could make things work. I thought it'd be great to have a team go. Maybe some of us could do the Jerusalem Marathon together. Not as many takers all of a sudden. But yes, going. Okay. Now, I'd like to apply this. I think that is, he's going to all the world. You put all the Great Commission passages together. The idea is that every creature, Mark, would hear the gospel. Okay. So certainly, going over there. Next town, next state, next country, leaving the place where we live to go to that other place, certainly is is the main emphasis of what it means to go. You willing to do that? Don't have to answer that. It means more than that, though. Now, so I've said, yes, it means this is a missionary passage. It means that some of us need to vocationally obey God's call in our life and leave our community to go to another place so that disciples can be made. That's clear to the intent of Scripture. What happens when I do that? Can you think with me? So someone said Africa. You leave today, said, yes, God has called me to Africa, and so I need to obey Him. I've now raised my support, and I'm flying out of here. I'm going to land in, you name it. What are the hurdles you'll face? This is the real question you can answer. What are the hurdles that you will face when you do that? Language, right away. Wait, one. Deb, you got, Customs, yeah. So, you live differently than they live. And you don't know what the differences are until you make the mistake. Okay? Alright. So going involves not just geographical. Is that the right way to put that? Not just geographically going or going to a new place, but it also means that in my mind I got to make some changes here. Right? I got to learn how to communicate with the people that I'm going to. Correct? That seems pretty obvious, doesn't it? Okay. My conviction is I understand the Bible to be teaching that this is the essence of evangelistic ministry. And it's not just geographical. It's not just leaving my place and going to their physical place. It's leaving my mental place and going to their mental place. Who are they, these people? Now, we said this morning, this dovetails with the morning message, in that we talked about that we're made in the image of God, and so therefore valuable, and that when we show people they're valuable, we have done the first part of the evangelistic ministry. We are practicing an evangelistic relationship. An evangelistic relationship is a relationship of integrity. It's not just so they'll become Christians. It's because they are valuable to God and we want to know them as God's creature. But that invariably, that relationship as it develops, because the greatest need of every individual is to be saved, that relationship will invariably lead you to the opportunity to share the gospel with people. You take the time to know them, you'll have the time to share with them. Now, the way that happens, you know, I'm sharing the two most important things I can this morning about evangelistic ministry. For whatever my life is worth, the years we put into it, it comes down to these things. This is not just a speaking engagement to me. This is delivering life, how to deliver life. And so, when we talk about that relationship now I want to have, if I'm going to have a relationship with this young lady, what is your name? Say it again. Patience? I don't hear. I have, I went to the doctor and they said that I have asymmetrical hearing loss. So I had to go get my head x-rayed to make sure that there wasn't a tumor in there, and they said, good news, there's nothing there. So, I struggle with hearing. And then when it gets there, what am I going to do? There's nothing there, you know. So, did you say patience? Are you patient? Sometimes. Whoa, name like that. Okay. So, if I'm going to show patience that she's valuable, I need to learn her name. Now, this happens to be my greatest weakness. If you say something theologically, I will not forget it. It won't ever happen. But the name that goes with that is a struggle and it's a bad deal. If I want to know patience, I need to know about her life. I need to extend over there. If I want to share the gospel with patients, I don't know that you need the gospel. I need to find out, does she need the gospel? And all about her life. But it starts with that relationship that I can be able to do that. But then, so we understand about the image of God relationship. It's just a relationship of integrity. It's a genuine relationship because they're made in the image, each one of us made in the image of God, and we care about each other. But now, to share the gospel, there's another step I have to take. Not only do I need to affirm that you likewise are made in the image of God by the way I treat you, but if I'm going to go, I need to learn about the way you think. What are your customs? How do you live your life? How does that affect the way you'll receive the gospel? These are very different from culture to culture. The gospel remains the same. Everybody has an intellect. Everybody is rational. Everybody has a sense of guilt. Everybody is volitional. Everybody desires personal care. These are all true. They never change, so we can always share the gospel. But how a person will respond to you and understand you is culturally conditioned. Do you know, since I came back here from Boston, when we went to Boston, it was a horrible time of adjustment. I hated the place. Then I grew to love the place. They're so blunt and in your face there. What are we going to do? Am I supposed to be done right now? I thought it was a quarter tell, wasn't it? Did I have that wrong? I did, didn't I? Well, somebody just left, and I thought I must be... Okay. No, am I supposed to be done? All right. Because I do believe in trying to close on time. I think it's impolite to be the visiting speaker and go forever. Okay. So I'll try not to go forever. But just shy of that. Okay, now, where was I at? Yeah, entering their world. So I came back to Iowa. You know, so in Boston, everybody's blunt and in your face, and I really gravitated that pretty quick. That wasn't a bother. I figured that out right away. But coming back here, there has been troubles. There's been problems. My younger brother actually is now in Florence, Iowa. He came back, he called me and he said, Bill, he goes, my mother and father-in-law are down there in Florence and we're thinking we're need to come back. Now, he's the guy who went to Kurdistan a year ago. He teaches pastors around the world. And he said, what can you tell me about that? And I said, well, Bob, the first thing I'll tell you, it's the hardest move I've ever made. And he goes, why? He goes, because you're just going to learn not to bring your culture with you. You need to go back and be there for a while and just be quiet. Reintroduce yourself to what it means to be from Iowa. I mean, we grew up here. And I said, it's going to feel like you're driving down a one-way road the wrong way. And he said, yeah, and it's a gravel road. One place is not better than the other place. It is not. Don't misunderstand me, because this is part of what happens. But it is very different. And it's not just that. When you minister to an individual, they're different than the last individual. They're not the same. It's not a cookie-cutter approach. And if you want to impart the divine life to them, you have to take the time to learn them. You can't do it without taking the time to learn and to love people. It will take all that you are to do that. When I went to Boston working on my house, building the building, you remember all those years ago, I'd watch the neighbor sit in his hammock and wonder why he wouldn't lift a finger to help me. That's not something you do in Iowa. When I'm in Iowa, before I left, working on the farm, putting up the farm fence, the neighbor stops and starts talking to me. He talks to me for 45 minutes, and I'm thinking, hey, I'm supposed to be doing the fence. What am I going to tell my boss? That night, I talked to the boss, Craig. I said, Craig, I'm sorry, I should have finished, but the neighbor, he stopped me, And he wouldn't leave. We talked for 45 minutes, and Craig looks at me and goes, Bill, he was pretty serious. You understand this? The neighbor stops to talk to you for 45 minutes. You talk to him for 45 minutes. I go, what? Yeah. He goes, we watch each other's back. It's a community here. We take care of each other. You got to spend time with them. Ay, ay, ay. I walked into a coffee shop in Waynesburg, and the owner yelled at me. That's been 8 months ago, and I still haven't figured out why. I have honestly no idea. And I said, what did I do? She goes, you of all people should know. But I don't. Can you clue me in? And what I've learned, so I say all these things to help you realize, to help us realize together, that the effective evangelistic ministry means that you go and you find out about that person. You learn that person. Ron George, who we've talked a lot about, the sheriff from, what kind did I say that was now? I told somebody today, it came to me and it's gone again. What? Keokuk County. He's now retired. You know, we would go. I met him at the coffee shop, and at some point he became a Christian. It was obvious he started talking about God all of a sudden. And you could see that the transformation taking place. We became friends, started discipling towards church membership. And I said something in the afternoon one day, talking to another guy, Justin Lundberg. Thank you. I said, Justin, I said, I used to come here in the morning, but when I do, I can't get my work done because I end up talking with all these different people, including Ron George. Now, I didn't mean anything bad by that. It's just that I had to get my work done. Well, that got back to Ron. And the next time we were together with the group, he said, well, he goes, some people just throw you under the bus. And I knew that he was talking about me. I hadn't done anything wrong. I didn't think any ill of that. It was my problem, not his. But this is his culture. So what am I, this is Ron George, a baby believer, and I've just offended him. God tells us it's not a good idea to do that. So what am I going to do? Well, I don't know what to do. So one day I said, I got to make this right with Ron. He's a young believer. And I drove to his town, Keswick, Iowa. You know, he invited me there earlier. I was worried I wouldn't be able to find the American Legion. And then I got to Keswick and realized it's not going to be a problem. He has a gym next to the Legion, which is his workout gym. It's full of posters and plaques and trophies and medals. He knows judo and boxing and all these martial arts, and he's a champion of all these things. We were in there about a half hour until his daughter said, Dad, it's your birthday. We're waiting for you in the next building. That's Ron George. So now he's offended at me. He's a young believer. I drive to Keswick. And I ask somebody, do you know where Ron George lives? Oh, he's not at home. He's over there at the grocery store. So I walk. This is Iowa Coast, okay? Everybody knows where Ron George is. I walk in the grocery store. There he is sitting, four or five other guys sitting there looking at me. Said, Ron, I need to talk with you, okay? But he doesn't move. And so I had to sit. So I sat down. I'm sitting there. Bill from Boston. What are we doing here? They talked for a while. Half hour later, finally, Ron said, well, he said, we can go on over to the gym. Okay? We go to the gym. He starts picking up the stuff. Putting the stuff away because kids come in there and they mess it up. It's a free gym. Anybody can come in whenever they want. And I said, Ron, I need to talk with you. You know, I think that there's been this thing, and I made a mistake, and I want to ask you to forgive me. And he wouldn't stop. He's walking around. I'm following him. I'm following him around the gym, to the weight rack, to the all these places. I followed Ron, and he won't stop. I said, Ron! He turned, I said, I don't have that many friends here. I can't lose your friendship. And the sheriff said, you're still my friend. I guess that many accepted my apology. That's not the way it would happen in Boston in a million years. But if I love Ron George, and this goes for the evangelistic relationship, if you love somebody, you don't just stay in your world and say, yeah, but you're wrong. No, you go into their world. And the question that we need to ask ourselves, are we willing to do that? Are we willing to leave our place? You know, we try to defend our turf. Somebody offends us politically. We want to respond. Who cares? The world's going to burn. And that person will too unless you reach him. God doesn't need you to defend His dignity. He'll take care of that all Himself. What He needs you to do is be a reconciler with men to God. And so you got to let all that baggage go and think about the soul. And it takes a lifetime of effort. It takes a lifetime of practice. It just takes the desire to win that battle. We need to go. And you're going, yeah, we do. Father, in all seriousness now, we look across this congregation and we see really unlimited potential for the redemption of individuals. So put it into our heart to work at it until we get it done. We pray in Jesus' precious name. Amen.